What is up, wrestling fans? Welcome to episode number 649 of the SmartCon Moment Smack Talk Podcast, Hot Tags of the Week. I'm your host, as always, Tony Mango, joined as always by Callum Wiggins.
Hello.
So I will preface this episode by saying I am quite sick right now, so if my voice sounds awful, I apologize if I cough during this or anything along those lines. I'm working with what I'm working with here. Hopefully everybody else is feeling good. Hopefully everybody's having a good start to their weekend. It's Friday. We got Friday Night SmackDown tonight. We got some interesting topics to talk about here. So as always, we always want to know what you have to say too. So drop your thoughts in the comment section below. While you're listening to this episode, you know, tag something in the comments if you want to specifically be like, oh, that's what I'm referencing or something. Keep in mind all this marketplace stuff that we always say too. If you're ever there on YouTube, click on that like button, double check that you're subscribed, ring that notification bell, and also click on the thanks button, toss a little spare change our way. The join button is how you get access to the members only content on YouTube, which is the same as the Patreon, but if you are more on the video side of things, then YouTube is that front, Patreon's audio only. They're exactly the same, though, the Darkest, Pick Poison tier and all that. It's all greatly, greatly, greatly appreciated. It's all going to help continue to have more episodes of this show and more of the website and more for Fanboys Anonymous, even, because it all funnels back to the same thing. I forget how I had phrased it before, but something like if you water the roots of a mango tree, every branch ends up getting fed or something. Redbubble and TeePublic is also where you pick up your merchandise. Again, same deal. Fanboys Anonymous on that, or a mango tees, or SmartCon Moment. It's all going to the same place. So if you got it in your wallet and you want to help us out, that is the best way to keep us going. But also, if you are leaving your comments and all that stuff, that does help too. It's completely free to do that and to hit the like button. Definitely hit that like button. Can't stress that enough. Also, hit up the Discord, chat it up there. Always fun to see more discussions over on that. I know Gilly has been making a lot of really good discussions lately. So, you know, the more the merrier for Discord. It's an open channel. Again, there I go with the needing to clear my throat already. You don't need to have any kind of, like, you know, you need to get approved for it or something. Just join the Discord and chat it up. All right, so that kind of housekeeping stuff is out of the way. We have, of course, our main event that we had done earlier this week, where we got into our randomizer mock draft of the King of the Ring. Go back and check that out. Coming up in the future, we're going to do some kind of a follow-up for that with a fantasy booking. Probably do a dark cast as well about that, because I've already actually done not only my card, but a different variation of my card. And then I've booked what I would do with your group, Callum, and with Rob's group. I have a 32-person tournament for both of you that that I would do. And it'd be interesting to see what's different and all. Obviously, we'll talk more about that when it comes to that podcast. But generally speaking, do you give that any work yet on your card?
I've done like a initial 32-man tournament where I've like broke it down, but I did it in like the span of an hour or so, and I want to look back over it and see if there's anything else I can do, because I was pretty happy with my first output, but I'm wondering if there's ways I can enhance it in certain ways.
I thought it was harder than I expected it.
Yeah, because you're just going by, essentially with a tournament, you're going by like the strength of the matches, really, and like putting matchups together. So I think that, yeah, as I say, it's only 32 people to choose from, and they were varying quality, so I don't know. It's a tricky prospect, but I might try and do something similar to you about, like, once I've kind of finalised that, also try and do, like, more of a 16-man tournament with other people available to do, like, a more King of the Ring kind of card as opposed to
just the tournament.
Yeah. Although it would be quite difficult to do a whole pay-per-view with just a 16-man tournament and then like develop matches on top of it. I assume that'd have to be a two-night thing, but
realistically you'd have to just be like, all right, this is like some 8-hour WrestleMania or something. So, you know, stay tuned for that, everybody. We'll probably come back around to that over next week to you know, give our fantasy booking cards and our dark cast elements of that or something like that. So keep that in mind. But today we have the dark cast. So Let's get into some of these different topics that we've got going on now. Like this one being Jerry the King Lawler, if we're talking about kings, has had his WWE announcer contract ended, which a lot of people took in a weird direction. They immediately jumped to Jerry Lawler is out of WWE and when are we going to see him in AEW? Which, of course, everybody jumps to those things, and it's kind of funny because it's like, even if you look on history, people don't just immediately jump to AEW. And plenty of people, actually, I would say the vast majority of people don't end up in AEW. But on top of that, he's still on a Legends deal. He's just not having his contract renewed for his commentary position, which makes perfect sense because that's more money that the company is putting out there for a job that he realistically is not going to be doing going forward. He's still dealing with complications from the stroke that he had. He's still working on getting healthy. I'm sure he wouldn't want to be traveling all that much to do that. And they haven't really used him as their go-to commentator in how many years to begin with? I mean, it's been... Did he return to full-time commentary after the heart attack? Or did he get phased out from that point on?
It depends what Charles that you're talking about.
The one where he suffered on the air.
Oh, he definitely went back after that. That was in 2012.
I don't remember for sure like how long he was doing that afterward. But he definitely, it's been a while since Jerry was a main commentator.
So it was a 2019 was the last time he was a full-time commentator.
Wow, 2019. I thought it was earlier than that.
Well, that's when they reformatted the Raw broadcast team for it was him, Vic Joseph and Dia Madden. With the Raw announced team.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
After, that was the Heyman kind of era of Raw. That was their first commentary team. And then eventually Vic Joseph was replaced by Tom Phillips. Dia Madden was replaced by Byron Saxton. And then eventually Lawler was replaced by Samoa Joe. So
1-to-1 ratio with all that, right? So when Jerry Lawler's contract ends with this, I just feel like it's, you know, it's a natural progression. I don't think that this is any kind of like, it's not a shot against him. It's not like he is like in his prime and WWE just decided to say, you know, F off. Like I would have made the argument for like Mackenzie Mitchell and Matt Camp about like, man, they're really good. Why did you let them go? Like they were really good in their spots. And, you know, if like Samantha Irvin were to be released right now, it would be like, that's insane. What the hell? But Jerry Lawler being in a more just Legends deal, this makes perfect sense to me. I think people are kind of going a little crazy over it.
Yeah, I think that it's, in some way, it's a little bit of a changing of the guard thing, because I think in a different era of, or different people in charge of WWE, I think someone like Lawler would have been, you know, not utilized, but would have been protected with that deal. They have that deal just renewed just out of loyalty, even if they had no intention of using him in that role. But yeah, this is a different WWE. They don't have the same level of, even loyalty or reverence to Jerry Lawler's career. And yeah, he's likely not going to be doing any kind of commentary anytime soon while he is still in the process of recovering from the stroke. He's 74 years old. He's not going to get back to his heyday in terms of his commentary work. So yeah, I think it's probably outside of the legend thing and making like sporadic appearances for WWE, it's probably just like the curtain being drawn on his full time wrestling career.
And hopefully, you know, I mean, I don't know what his plans are for. If he wants to, like, I hope that he, you know, realistically doesn't try to get back into the ring, but he might be in a position that he is fine with that too. I haven't seen any kind of indication otherwise, or even necessarily for that or whatever, but, you know, they can still bring people in every once in a while. Like, just because you're not on a contract for being a commentary person in like an official capacity doesn't mean that they can't. If they're in, you know, they pop up in Memphis and they're right around where Jerry is, I'm sure they're going to be like, hey, hang out backstage. And they might even be like, hey, do you want to like do commentary for a match? Or do you want to do something on like, you know, if we have a pay-per-view going on in the area, it might be like, you know, do you want to join the pre-show panel or something? You can still do that kind of stuff. So I hope that we still see Jerry Lawler in some capacity because Lawler is great. But the Legends deal makes a lot. I mean, Undertaker's on a Legends deal right now. And I'm pretty sure he doesn't have any other kind of contract. It's pretty sure it's just the Legends deal. So, yeah, it's the nature of the beast. And I do not expect him to be popping up in AEW anytime soon for those people that do that. Let's talk about when it comes to, you know, this idea of like, you know, changing of the guard and stuff. We know we're going to get some changes very soon in WWE with just their actual like production stff with yeah, we talked about before the Netflix deal and Fox not renewing the rights for SmackDown. That's going to go over to USA. And one of the things that was very confusing for a little while there, up until now that we actually have some like an answer to this, we talked about this however many weeks ago, that there's a gap between when those deals end and when those new deals start, because they wanted to start them all, I believe, like the very first week of January, they might start. It might be a little bit different than that. I don't know what the purpose of that is, but for a few weeks or so, from like October through that point, we were wondering what's going to happen with Raw and SmackDown and potentially NXT. I don't know for sure about what's going to happen with NXT, but now we know the answer for that is that Raw and SmackDown are going to air on the USA Network. And I believe, if I remember correctly, that it's a $25 million deal, which, yeah, I mean, they weren't going to get $1 billion for 3 months worth of TV, so it's probably a pretty good deal. But Raw and SmackDown are staying on the air. It's not like they're just going to go away for a few months. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, it seems to be a pretty good deal for all parties. I mean, it's a very cut price deal for USA. It's clear that the ball was very much in their court in terms of making this arrangement, because $25 million is absolutely enough for 3 months. It's absolutely like nothing compared to the amount they were paying year on year for WWE content. So I think that, yeah, so they get to have a bit of a cut price deal, get a few extra months on their television show as a result of it. And WWE, seemingly, at least according to what Dave Meltzer said, had pretty much budgeted for $0 being made over that 3 month period, based on the fact they probably would have ended up, if USA hadn't agreed to it, they probably would have ended up putting Raw on YouTube for 3 months.
And just, which would have been kind of interesting.
Yeah, but they would have made obviously no money out of it. But, you know, it could have been a way to get some other eyeballs on it by making it like just freely available for people to watch. But, you know, they've decided to do the smart thing and get some short-term extra funds off the back of it, a bit more security, and then they can go over to Netflix in the start of the year, and then they're off to the races with that.
I'm still trying to find what happens with NXT, though. It doesn't seem like anybody has that answer yet. So we might end up seeing NXT on YouTube, if that ends up being the case. I mean, more than likely, they'll probably sort out some kind of a deal with USA, where maybe USA is more just interested right now in Raw and SmackDown. And then, you know, for $5 million, they might get NXT or something. But I'd be down to see them put like NXT for those few months on YouTube or something. Like, that might end up actually being beneficial. They could get some more people clicking on that. And technically speaking, if they air it as like a premiere thing, they could get people that are stupid enough to send in super chats. Do you ever see that happen in like, you know, there's like super chats that people will send in for like the buy-in or the 0 hour now for like, AEW or like, the press conference things or something. Like, I don't know what they think they're getting out of sending the super chats, but, yeah, I mean, that's one way to make money for some companies. So I'd be kind of interested to see what would happen with that, if it would end up being like the Wild West and that they just go like, all right, well, the TV doesn't really matter. We could just do crazy stuff because it's going to be on YouTube or something. That could be kind of fun. But we don't really know what's happening with NXT right now. I'm assuming based off of this, we'll probably get an answer relatively soon because it ends their deal. I think that the deal with NXT ends around the same time in like September. And I don't know when the CW one starts. The CW one might be actually different. It might start like pretty much right afterward now that I'm looking right around that. But yeah, for the meantime, we're going to have like that back and forth switch. It's going to be like, we got Raw and SmackDown and NXT where they are right now. And then once we get to that switch over, it's all going to be on the USA Network. And then we're going to be in the USA and CW and Netflix territory. And you got to relearn all the muscle memory of switching the channels and stuff. You know, different times, different business things. And another story that kind of coincides with that a little bit of, you know, carrying over agreements and switching over to a new era and all. Saudi Arabia wants to renegotiate their deal in some fashion. And the main things that I've been seeing are they want the Royal Rumble or WrestleMania, and they want more pay-per-views. And I don't know if you've seen anything to the contrary, but the responses that I've seen has mostly been, okay, we'll hear you out, but probably not. At least that's the impression that I get.
Well, according to, I'm probably going to butcher the name, but Turki Alaushik, who's the chairman of Saudi Arabia's General Entertainment Authority, has told ESPN that there's going to be an enhancement of Saudi Arabia's current agreement with WWE, which will be announced later this month. So at least according to him, there has already been an agreement reached to enhance their current deal. So whether that means more pay-per-views, more live events, more, or putting a more major pay-per-view like the Royal Rumble or WrestleMania in Saudi Arabia. Obviously, we know that WrestleMania next year won't be happening in Saudi Arabia because they've already announced the location for that. But yeah, it could very easily be them saying that the Royal Rumble is going to be in Saudi Arabia next year. So yeah, but I guess based on that, there must be something that they're doing to get more money out of that the country. So yeah, we'll wait and see what there's. I guess we'll have more to talk about when they actually do make the official announcement for it.
So you're expecting Royal Rumble to be?
We just know that we know it can't be WrestleMania, and if they do want to have, if they're saying specifically they want to bring the Royal Rumble or WrestleMania or something of a bigger caliber in terms of just name value to Saudi Arabia, then that seems like the most obvious choice.
I mean, I definitely do not expect any WrestleMania anytime soon to be going to Saudi Arabia. They've kind of indicated in the past, based off of their track record and what they've been doing with all these international pay-per-views and all, that they really do want to focus on the big pay-per-views stay in the United States or, you know, maybe Canada or, you know, whatever. And that, you know, you could take something like Backlash and put that in France, but you're not necessarily going to be building around WrestleMania in London or WrestleMania or Royal Rumble in Germany or something. And we've been sort of all assuming that Saudi Arabia desperately wants WrestleMania. WrestleMania is the big money maker. That's the one that is going to get the most eyes, that's going to be the most profitable. But it's in a weird way too, I don't know how much more profitable it would be, considering like the part of the appeal of what WrestleMania brings to these different places. And now we know WrestleMania 41 is coming to Las Vegas, we'll talk about that in a minute too, is the draw of all the tourism. And it's a big difference to ask people in like the United States to go to Cincinnati or to go to Detroit or wherever it is for like for WrestleMania, where a lot of people are not necessarily from outside the country. And then there, you know, there's plenty of people that are like, they fly from outside the country and stuff like that. I don't want to, you know, disregard that. But I can't imagine, say, yeah, WrestleMania this year in Philly, ROH runs a show there, and GCW runs like 50 shows there, and WWE's got, you know, these deals with all these other companies to do these like charity works and stuff. Saudi Arabia is not going to get that. Like, we're not going to see all the indie promotions that are out there in the United States be like, all right, well, we're all going to pack up our bags and go to Saudi Arabia. They don't have the money for that. So it kind of feels to me almost like they want it just to be able to say that they had that, like a little tip on the cap for them. I can't imagine WrestleMania comes to them. Royal Rumble, maybe. But we were kind of joking after we recorded the main event for this week that are they just going to get another greatest Royal Rumble and be like, kind of, here's a secondary prize sort of thing? I could see that being more of the case. If the enhancement is just an enhancement, have they said if it's an enhancement from like the Saudi perspective or the WWE perspective?
It's just the report saying it's an enhancement, no specifics.
I would think more than likely that means we'll do 3 pay-per-views a year.
If I was to put money on something right now, I'd say that WrestleMania 42, at least in part, takes place in Saudi Arabia.
Really?
Yeah. I don't agree with your assessment that like the tourism isn't worth it for it. It's massively worth it. And you say that, yeah, most American fans won't go to WrestleMania, but you know which ones wouldn't go to WrestleMania if it's Saudi, but you know which American fans would go to Saudi Arabia and if WrestleMania was there, the rich ones. And that's all the WWE cares about is to... Have you seen the prices that... I mean, I don't know if you have seen, but like, have you seen the prices they've put out for the Clash at the Castle event that's happening?
No.
The lowest price ticket is £300.
That sounds about right. That was like what WrestleMania had going on.
Well, yeah, that was similar to France as well. So they're really like... They don't care about the common like box standard WWE fan because that person's not going to pay £300 for one ticket to go to one wrestling show. They care about the ones that have the financial capital to do so. And so if they don't get a load of American fans, guess what? They'll get a load of Saudi fans, they'll get a load of European fans, and lots of Australian fans. Like people from all around the world to just go to congregate in Saudi Arabia, which is what Saudi Arabia would want to get some people to come into their country. I mean, they wouldn't give a fuck about the whole WrestleMania weekend stuff. And frankly, at this point in time, considering the state of the independent scene, I don't think anyone really cares that there's no WrestleMania weekend stuff anymore. I could also envision a scenario where WrestleMania 42 is kind of ground shared between one night takes place in Saudi Arabia and the other night takes place in a stadium in the US. So they essentially, they send over half the roster to Saudi Arabia to do that show, and then the other half stay in the US and do the show in like a big US stadium somewhere.
I hope we don't get a WrestleMania 2 where it's, you know, we're going to get...
It won't all be happening the same night going from one location and each one only gets half an hour of it. Each show only gets like an hour of entertainment. At least in this version, both things would get, you know, one full night of stuff happening. But yeah, I could definitely envision that happening. I think Saudi would play huge amounts of money to get WrestleMania. And if they can make that a consistent thing, like they have one night of WrestleMania every single year moving forward, and then the other night takes place in some US city instead, I can definitely see that being the case.
My ideal of this situation, as somebody who's not an investor and not obviously looking at the bottom line the way that WWE is and stuff, just as a fan, I would hope... And I know that a lot of people would probably disagree with me on this one. I would hope that the quote-unquote enhancement is... I know you want WWE to bring WrestleMania here. I know you want Royal Rumble. And we can pitch you maybe SummerSlam or Survivor Series. But I'll even go a step further than that. I still want Survivor Series to go back to Raw versus SmackDown. And I'd be like, can we bring War Games to Crown Jewel? and just do that and then be like, that's your enhancement. You're getting the War Games match. Oh, yeah,
they'd be super excited. They get one type of match instead of WrestleMania. I'm sure that's really going to get them excited.
It's definitely not the same, but that's the part of me that's like, man, I hope that that's what we get is like, oh, the big enhancement is like, you're getting War Games this year. And then it would be like, neat. Okay, we move on, you know.
I don't know, maybe me just as like what I like to think a decent human being would just like them to, you know, kill the deal and realize the money's not worth the selling of the soul aspect of that relationship. But, you know, that's never going to happen.
There is that, but yeah, like you said, that's not going to happen. But when it comes to the WrestleMania that's coming up next, we know now that is going to be in Las Vegas in 2025. And it's interesting because out of nowhere, WWE just has two things going on in Vegas. Like, we originally had NXT Battleground set for next week is when everything's going to happen, or the week after that, with Double or Nothing. Like, Double or Nothing is going to be in Vegas. It's been in Vegas every year except for the lockdown year. So that's just, you know, I mean, it's Double or Nothing. The whole thing's built around Vegas. That's no surprise. But NXT Battleground switched from the End Market Arena in, I believe it's Savannah, Georgia, to the UFC Apex. We already talked about that before. But now WrestleMania is coming to Las Vegas. And there's been lots more chatter about the whole Minnesota thing than Vegas up until, like, it was like, oh, it's Minnesota, it's Minnesota, it's Minnesota. And then it became, I mean, it's Minnesota or Vegas, but most likely Minnesota. And then the more weeks went by, the more weeks that it was like, oh, I don't know about that Minnesota thing. It seems more like it's Vegas. Now we know it's confirmed. It's Vegas. So, you know, maybe Minnesota is able to figure it out for WrestleMania 42, but they're also pushing it back a few weeks. They wanted to avoid clashing with the Final Four. And I guess that they wanted to specifically go to a warmer climate. And not only is Vegas a warmer climate than Philadelphia, but it's also later on in the year. So, you know, a few weeks later, it does get warmer. So that makes sense and all. I'm not a big fan of it being that late into April because that's just more time to just like, you know, how are they going to stretch out Royal Rumble all the way up into that? But the Vegas element of it really stands out to me as I wonder if NXT Battleground was part of the negotiation for this, that it was like, let's see how you approach negotiating with that to lead into those. And they must have liked it. Vegas is the quote unquote entertainment capital of the world. They host most of the UFC pay-per-views, which that's another thing. Maybe we're going to see more WWE stuff in Vegas going forward.
Well, with the relationship with USA, there's always that high possibility. But I think that I wouldn't read too much into like the NXT side of things. I think people big up NXT too much when it's actually just such a minor player in the whole WWE landscape. I think that I think it comes down to Vegas probably just offered more money, or they want to establish a more long term relationship with Vegas. Maybe also the fact that they didn't enjoy the climate that Philadelphia offered, and then going to Minnesota is just going to be even more of a difficult thing weather-wise. So decided, yep, we're going to focus WrestleMania warmer places. If it's going to cap here in April, it needs to be in warm places. And yeah, so I guess we probably could see more WrestleMania shows in places like Las Vegas, in California, in Texas, in Florida, those sort of areas. And then less so a focus on areas like New York or Minnesota or Philadelphia moving forward. They can get like Summer Slams and stuff like that instead.
So let's go back and talk about some backlash stuff. Not necessarily the pay-per-view itself. Although actually, you know, I know that you are not really watching it and stuff, but did you actually have any other opinions about backlash that you wanted to talk about?
I didn't watch it. So,
yeah.
So, I say I've got nothing to add.
But let's talk about this whole press conference thing. So, this one journalist, now I didn't watch the full press conference. Admittedly, I was like, this time around, it doesn't seem like it's worth it. And nobody said that there was anything going on except for this one story. We know that Drew Gulak is gone from WWE, and that Lucas Sharpio was saying, that's the very last question. He brought up something that I feel is a very valid question, which was essentially, we're hearing that Drew Gulak is released. Can you confirm that? And can you speak on whether the Ronda Rousey element is why he got released? Triple H did not seem happy with this. And the vibe that I got was, motherfucker, why are you asking me about a negative when we should just be patting ourselves on the back about how Backlash did all these great numbers, and should we just do that? And that in and of itself is annoying, because it's like, all right, well, these people, they're journalists. Like, that's their job, is to ask questions, not to just be like, great pay-per-view. How amazing was this pay-per-view? And set you up for that. But apparently now there's a story going around that immediately after he asked this question, somebody on the WWE PR team went over to him and just said, that was a dumb thing to do. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot recently that from Joe Lanza over the Voices of Wrestling and some other people that have shed a lot of light into how the WWE PR process works and press conference being part of that. And fundamentally, so there's been a lot of, like, that I've heard about it, and I looked into it because I was quite interested to see, once this information came out, about what happened at the press conference, because you're right, Triple H clearly wasn't prepared to answer a real question to someone coming up and wanting to know about Drew Gulak release, and then if that in any way that was connected to Ronda Rousey, which anyone with a working brain knows clearly is, but Triple H was clearly unprepared for it. And so instead of like answering the question in any kind of real direct way, or even like some sort of pre-prepared PR way, what he essentially said is, the sources you heard about Drew Gulak's release from are uncredible, which were Fightful and PWI, by the way.
Yeah, PWI, which are like two of the more reputable sources.
Yeah, exactly. And then proceeded to just say how WWE just releases people all the time in the same way like any other sporting business does. And then finalized it by saying that Drew Gulak wasn't released. He was, his contract wasn't renewed. So that was what the final thing was. And so then Lucas Sharpio, who I think, you know, did his job. He asked a legitimate question in search of a legitimate answer. His retelling of the entire experience there is just, it paints such a light on, sheds such a light on like how the WWE PR machine is working to its full potential here. In that, and I'm not saying it as like an overall criticism. I'm saying an overall criticism of just how PR works in general. Someone who works in marketing, I kind of know that from first-hand experience. But it's not a criticism of WWE doing exactly what they should be doing in the way that PR works and operates. But essentially, just talking about how he presented the idea to PR, and then PR said that that was a stupid thing to do because it's a hard question, so you shouldn't be asking Triple H those things when he's trying to celebrate and just have an easy time. How members of the press conference, once he asked that question, audibly groaned about him asking that question. So clearly they've cultivated this group of people that appear at these press conferences. They're only there to just say softball questions and basically just say to Triple H in different iterations, wow, what a great show. What is it like being like the greatest booker of all time?
Yeah.
Right now.
And loving this Paul Levesque era.
Yeah. Well, they just like, you know, metaphorically choked down his sledgehammer. and so he got a negative reaction. He apparently, after he asked a question, like people in the other people that were at the press conference went up to him and like chastised him for it. Which is also doubly shame because apparently he was he'd injured himself the day beforehand, so he was going around on like, I don't know if he was on crutches, but he was definitely like limping around the place. So he was just limping out of the room, and people were just saying, "That was a real dick move of you to ask that question." And then he talks about how apparently WWE PR slip questions to people to ask Triple H. So it's not like they're asking questions off the top of their head. They're being given questions by PR to ask Triple H directly. So he didn't do that, obviously. He asked his own question and got chastised for it. And, yeah, it just shows that these PR events that WWE are doing, and, you know, to an extent AEW's ones as well, is a lot of just, okay, we want this group of people in front of us. We want fans in front of us asking us questions about how that much they enjoy the show and what about the matches and all that other stuff, whereas they don't want people to ask the questions about this wrestler getting released or what's the deal with the Vince McMahon lawsuit right now, or could talk about Stephanie McMahon coming back to the company after her absence. What's that motivated that? They don't want these sort of questions. Because every time Triple H has been asked that question, he was asked one of those questions at the end of the Royal Rumble press conference. I can't remember what that one was specifically. I know we talked about it at the time. But it was essentially like another one of those questions that he couldn't be prepared for. And then he gets immediately flustered, says something stupid, and then PR then has to do like damage control off the back of that. Not the actual group damage control going around and say and apologize.
Damage control without the CTRL.
Yeah, because he says the things about PW Insider and Fightful, which are two credible sources that work with WWP. Well, I say work with WPR, obviously they have a relationship with them like any good media outlet would have. And then they basically said, oh, threw those two under the bus. Then he had to apologize to them, and he did those things like sending a cheese board to Sean or Sap that he put on Twitter afterwards.
Oh, he sent him a cheese board? I didn't see that.
Yeah, I know. I have a bit of an issue with this as well, because I don't want to throw certain people under the bus, especially because Rob is a co-partner of us and obviously works for Fightful, so I don't want to go too far. But I think that the Triple H's response to all this stuff was terrible, and the way WWPR kind of operates that is clearly dishonest in certain ways. But I think the way the media people reacted to this stuff as well was pretty in the immediate out. I should say right now they've gone and made amends with Sharpio and stuff like that, but immediately I think they all went to cover their own tails rather than, you know, call out WWE rather than say, oh, WWE called us uncredible and either saying that was wrong or we do a good job and anything like that. I think Mike Johnson and Sean Ross Sapp in the immediacy kind of targeted Sharpio a little bit. I think they conflated the fact that Fightful and PW Insider did report that Drew Gulak got released, and Sharpio does mention that at the start of his question, but then he also asked about the Ronda Rousey thing. And I think in the immediacy, they assumed that Sharpio was also saying that they reported that the release was due to the Ronda Rousey incident, and that Sharpio was trying to clarify that, whereas when Sharpio was asking the question, he was just using the reporters to ask about the release and then ask separately on top of that whether that was due to the Ronda Rousey stuff. Mm-hmm. Which I think both Johnson and Sapp acknowledged in the days following it and have apologised to Sharpio for. So that's good to see at the very least. But it's always about timing as well, because then, like, at that point, the media circus kind of died down a little bit and people were focusing on the initial reaction rather than the later, more sensible reaction, let's say. So there's always that difficulty about it. So I don't think anyone really covered themselves in glory outside of Sharpio just doing his job and proving to be like the only real journalist in that room, it feels like, asking a legitimate question. And everyone else has kind of made a bit of an ass out of themselves.
So yeah, like WWE doesn't come out of this looking better.
No, exactly. And I think that it's just an interesting thought piece about the stuff. And it comes in the long line of stuff like the you know, that new story that came out about apparently these the recent set releases being like a lot kinder than previous releases in the past. So I think that's just, you know, this PR machine is really buzzing for WWE and it's doing a good job. I say I have no issue with them doing this, because that's just the way the world works. I have an issue with the fact that that is the way the world works, but knowing now that you can't really change that aspect, and WWE are doing exactly what they should be doing with their PR teams, AEW should follow suit, because AEW does not have a good PR record. When something goes wrong for AEW, they they can't really find a way to dig their way out of it that much, whereas WWE seemingly can go for it relatively unscathed. So, but I think it's just a general thing of hopefully going forward, or one or two things I would say. One, either these press conferences are just scrapped altogether, because if it's just going to be a group of people in a room just saying how great a show was and asking softball questions that don't mean anything and just in there in the pursuit of content, then they should just be scrapped altogether. Or that this opens the eyes of like, okay, we can't have an incident like this again. So if we do get quote unquote real journalists in the room, then we have to let them ask the questions. And whether we prepare Triple H and Tony Khan for these like harder, more journalistic key questions in the future, or whether we just let them go for it and just deal with the aftermath, whatever happens, then so be it. But you can't have it both ways, because at the moment I get the feeling that these press conferences are really yielding no real value other than just, you know, an extension of the kayfabe worlds in which they live in.
Yeah, and I mean, it is kind of a waste. Like, if you have a press conference, from the PR standpoint, PR stands for public relations. The whole point is trying to mitigate issues, trying to promote things, and trying to make the company look better. There's no debates about that. The entire purpose of the WWE PR team is to make bad situations go away or repackage them in a way that they don't seem as bad, and to pat themselves on the back for, you know, you should be praising us for this reason, and you should be praising us for this reason. That is just the way that it is. The way that, like, any other company and any other type of business, you know, like when it comes to marketing, it's like marketing is how do we sell something to somebody so that they actually buy the product? At the end of the day, that's all it is. It might be like, well, you have a different philosophy for marketing, or you have a different strategy, or, you know, you might be in a different type of marketing, but it's like, that's marketing, is you're trying to sell something. And entertainment is trying to entertain, but at the same time, they're trying to make money. So of course they're trying to, you know, sell entertainment value to advertisers and stuff like that. We all know how that game works. And we know that when it comes to press conferences, WWE wants everybody to just every question be hell of a pay-per-view. So fucking great. Can you tell us anything else you want us to run with as a story of how great you are? And that's not interesting. No. So it's like, all right, first off, that there's no entertainment value to that when it comes to a press conference. And then there's no actual journalistic value to it, because when you talk to a news reporter or something, if you're not just stating a fact, you know, the weather reporter, hey, it's going to be 68 degrees out today and there's a 10% chance of rain. Neat. Moving on. If they're doing some other kind of reporting that's just like a fluff piece, or it's just a glorified marketing thing, or you might as well be doing a sponsored advertisement then, right? And that's all that it is, you know, the press conferences are just advertisements for the event that just ended, then don't even bother with journalists, because you don't need a journalist to set you up with that. Just have fucking Byron Saxton be like, now I welcome to the stage Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair, who will say the pre-written thing that we want them to say. You don't need a journalist to be like, I'm Mike Smith from, I don't know, the combatwhatever.com, and can you tell us how great it is that you are the first ever, you know, such and such. Don't even bother then. We don't need Tony Khan's press conferences to be filled with questions like, I'm from the Chicago Times. Are you going to do more events in Chicago, if we already know the answer to it? I want more journalists to do what this Lucas did, which is just like, hey, this is a news story. Can you clarify what the hell's going on? Oh my God, a journalist asked a question.
Yeah, we need to understand, like, we need less fanboys and fangirls in the wrestling media that are just there to, you know, be part of the experience as opposed to, you know, actually asking some questions and trying to find out some real answers. I'm not saying those people shouldn't be doing, like, their content and stuff like that, but, like, that's... This is a press conference where supposedly you're supposed to be asking Triple H or Tony Khan or whoever legitimate questions to try and find out some good stuff. So, like, you offer no value to the press conference by being there. So, you know, do your little, like, you know, the little media runs they do at the start of every event, or, like, interviews post the event and stuff like that as well. But, you know, save the journalist-y part of the experience to the journalist. But the journalists are less and less encouraged to be there because, based on this experience, the Sharpie O experience, that I wouldn't want to be part of that, just, like, to feel, like, rejected. And, like, he's a 21-year-old guy doing his, like, first ever WWE press conference, and he had the balls to go out and ask a real question and got absolutely shunned and ridiculed for it. I wouldn't want to be in that situation, so why would any other real journalist want to be? It just discourages them from going to these events. And so by the end of it, once you've finally scared off everyone else that is unwilling to go to these because they're just going to be, you know, seen as buzzkills for asking a totally valid question about something that your company did, you know, that you, well, at least according to Triple H, didn't release Drew Gulak, but allowed his contract to expire, conveniently a few months after, like a month or so after the whole Ronda Rousey thing came out, in which prior to that he was a big part of the stable,
mm-hmm.
on TV every single week. And conveniently just immediately got disappeared from TV. Like, I say, like, what was the harm in Triple H saying that, yeah, we decided not to renew his contract because of certain things that came to light?
If anything, you would think that would be, yeah, that it would be like, yeah, the situation is we did an investigation and we don't tolerate that kind of behavior. It is a new regime. We're not going to turn a blind eye to that stuff, and we released him. Then you turn that into a positive, because then the story is Triple H confirms, fuck creepy people.
Whereas what they've basically done is he's tried to discredit the media, completely avoid the question, which means that he doesn't want to, like, reveal the
confirm
fact
it.
Confirm the fact that that's obviously what happened. And then push with the idea that, like, the contract was released, which also discredits Fightful and PW Insider, by the way. And I don't know whether, again, you don't know what the real truth is, but if the truth is that Drew Gulak's contract was just left to expire and he wasn't released, then that means both Fightful and PW Insider's reports were wrong, because they claim that he was released instead. So yeah, I don't know where the truth lies, but it's just an overall... You know, it's an icky situation for WWE, and hopefully this doesn't end where I fear it will end, which is just, you know, these voices in the room being crowded out and, like, pushed away as far as possible in the favour of WWE's relentless PR, propaganda machine, and instead just instead it opens their eyes to the fact, okay, we can't let this happen again. We need to let these people into the room and give them the freedom to ask their questions without any kind of judgment. Or them saying, yeah, let's just fucking not do this press conference anymore because it's not benefiting us in any way. Either way, I'm kind of happy with that kind of approach.
Yeah, I hope that this doesn't turn into them being like, well, you have to submit your questions in advance and we will approve them. And then we'll run down the list in order of your pre-approved questions. And if we don't like your question, we may reword it for you because we want this keyword to be put out there instead. And, like, you know, like, then again, just have people talk if you just want to say certain things. Don't have people pretend to put on a dog and pony show about you happen to ask us this thing that we just... You know, what a coincidence that you asked us about this record-breaking thing we want to put out there in the media or whatever. Like, you know, don't play the stupid games anymore. We can see through it. And for that matter, for the companies that then pick up those stories and run with it, the less you do that, the less that they can bother to do that and get away with it. So, you know, for those companies that would immediately take that story and just be like, yes, praise this and whatever, I mean, you give them the avenue to do that, so knock it off. And let's get some real questions out there and, you know, be in a much better space. Let's see what we got. Some other hot tags going on here. Save some of these things for a little bit later. We're wrapping up. Let's talk about New Japan. We haven't gotten into any kind of like non-WWE stuff here. New Japan Resurgence is coming up on, what day is that supposed to be?
Tomorrow.
Wow, tomorrow already. I, of course, as always, am not familiar of what's going on necessarily, but I'm taking a look at the card a little bit now. It seems like that there's some matches that should be at least pretty decent. And then there's plenty of matches with people that I have never heard of before. So what's going on with that that stands out to you?
Okay, so yeah, it's taking place in Ontario, Canada. Canada? It's not Ontario, Canada. It's California. It's always weird when it's Ontario. You just assume that it's Canada. The team is just Toronto, but it's actually in California instead. It's
like Winnipeg, Iowa.
Yeah. So just running down the card. So like Matt Vandergriff versus Adrian Quest. That's just like two of the young lions facing each other in a dot match. And then also in the pre-show, they've got Mustafa Ali versus Leo Rush, which is interesting. I presume Ali will win because Ali is doing a whole undefeated streak right now. And that's probably part of the reason why he's not part of the best of the Super Juniors, is because he probably would have to lose if that was the case. But yeah, we'll see how that goes. I've not been impressed with anything Ali's done since he's left WWE, so I doubt. But Leo Rush is really good, so hopefully it'll be a fun match. Six-man tag, Tomohiro Ishii, Rocky Romero, and the DKC versus the House of Torture. It's a House of Torture match, I don't care. Jack Perry's on it, so that should be fun at least. Interesting, Jack Perry's just gone back straight onto a New Japan show after after feeling like he like really wrapped it up last month at the When You See a Riot show. But that's good. He's still part of House of Torture as well as being part of the Elite. And I mean, we'll talk about what's happening with him and what's happening with Double or Nothing moving forward, but that could be fun. TMDK versus Gorillas of Destiny for the Strong Openweight Championship. I don't think the Strong Openweight Championship tag championship really means that much anymore, but I imagine the Mighty Don't Kneel will retain. They beat Gorillas of Destiny in the Fatal 4-Way match a couple of weeks ago. And then the other two members of that Fatal 4-Way match, Tom Lawler and Fred Rosser, are facing the other people that were in it, the West Coast Wrecking Crew. So I guess that will probably be a de facto number one contenders match for TNDK afterwards. So, you know, they're kind of a winter link together. LIJ versus Bullet Club, just Naito and Tsuji versus Finlay and Kenta. Finlay recently won back the global championship from Nick Nemeth. So he's now global champion again. So I presume that this will help determine who his next challenger will be. Because I imagine a member of whether Naito or Tsuji will win the match, and then they'll challenge Finlay for the global championship at the next New Japan show, or next big New Japan show, should I say. Stephanie Vaquer defending her Strong Women's Championship against Alex Windsor, who is Will Ospreay's partner. So yeah, she's a very talented English wrestler. I think Stephanie Vaquer will win, though, because she's doing very well with the Strong Women's Championship. Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Zack Sabre Jr. for what must be like the 30th time in the last 10 years or so. they wrestle all the time. I mean, they wrestled for the television championship at Wrestle Kingdom earlier this year. So now it's that their second match in about four or five months, and who gives a fuck who wins? I hope that Zack wins, because I still want Zack to push towards the world title, but you know, it doesn't really matter. There's nothing on the line in that match. That's because Jeff Cobb is the new world television champion after beating Zack Sabre Jr. a couple of weeks ago, and so he's defending that against Lance Archer, which should be a fun like mean guy match. Cobb will almost certainly retain, but it seems like it'll be a big meaty men slapping meat match.
Sometimes it's good to just see you put somebody like a Lance Archer, who's like a solid talent big guy, against a guy like Jeff Cobb, solid talent big guy. Like, you know,
yeah.
Doesn't work all the time, but a lot of times it does.
Shingo Takagi facing Yuya Uemura for the Never Open Weight Championship. I haven't been super impressed with Uemura in the things that I've seen him in. Like, he's totally fine, but I think a lot of people, when he went on Excursion, thought that when he came back, he was going to be, okay, Okada's leaving, this guy's going to be the one that steps up into his position, and they've done really very little with him. He's just a lackey for Sonata in the Just Five Guys stable. So I assume he'll lose here, but we'll see. Maybe this is a chance to like give him a leg up by giving him a title to win. But then they had Eddie Kingston facing Gabe Kidd for the Strong Openweight Championship in a no ropes last man standing match, which makes a lot of sense for these two because they're basically just mental and they'll just fight everywhere around the ring and in the ring, and probably they'll take the floor off and the padding off the ring and just be fighting on the wooden panels underneath. I assume this is where Kingston loses his last title from the three that he held at one point, and Gabe Kidd finally gets some gold because they've been teasing Kidd winning a title for a long time. So I think this is the right time to give him the championship.
Yeah, you've been mentioning Gabe Kidd as being your likely option for the next champion for quite a while now.
Oh yeah, well these two have been feuding on the US side of the New Japan for the last like 3 or 4 months. So it's basically been a long time coming to now they finally get to have this title match, and I'd be very, very surprised if Kingston holds the title any longer. I mean, he's held this championship for about 8 months now. It's been a long time he's been the Strong Openweight Champion.
He's held it for 309 days.
Yeah, so it's like he's coming up on a year as the champion. He's defended it 12 times already. So I think I think it's about time to have a bit of a change of the guard, and Gabe Kidd is certainly worthy of it. I think he's been one of the most entertaining guys in New Japan for quite a while. And then the main event, you have John Moxley against Shota Umino. So obviously it's a student versus teacher match. I would very, very likely assume that John Moxley's retaining here. I think it's too early to put the title on Shota. I think Shota will be champion by next year. I think there's a very good chance that he'll be like the first of the kind of the new New Japan Three Musketeers to become the world champion. But I think it's just a bit too early for him. It'll just be another learning experience for him to face John Moxley at the main event. I'd say stranger things would have happened though if he was to beat Moxley. But and then Moxley will hold the title, and then we'll see what his opponent for Finn Dor, because that's the next big. I can't remember if it's Dominion or Finn Dor that's the next big show for New Japan. But either way, I assume he'll go into Forbidden Door still in line to defend his title against somebody.
Yeah, I mean, the likelihood that they just go with Shota Umino as champion heading into Forbidden Door over Jon Moxley, I mean, Umino, of course, is a bigger deal in New Japan than he is in AEW just by proxy of, you know, being part of that company. But Moxley is by far the bigger name. And yeah, they could come back around to giving it to Umino. But to me, that, as an outsider, reads as like he's a good challenger for an easy story. He could put up a good fight. That'll make him look good. And then Moxley retains. I can't imagine that there's like any chance really that he actually beats Moxley here.
Yeah, so Dominion takes place on June 9th. So it's a couple of weeks before Forbidden Door. So I imagine he'll have a title defense there as well. I don't know who that is. Presumably we'll find out after, if he does, as I'm presuming he retains, but if he does retain, then I imagine someone will come out to challenge him for Dominion. I don't know who that... There's no one really springing to mind immediately that would be the one to challenge him. There's no one that I've seen kind of build up. I haven't been as like closely following stuff in New Japan for the last couple of weeks, so I don't know if there's anyone that's going to... that immediately springs to mind. You'd imagine it'd be someone on the show, because they would be there to challenge him. You wouldn't expect it to be someone who's still in Japan coming out or doing a video package to challenge him. They usually just have someone directly come out to challenge him. So out of the people that are there, I'd imagine the options are really Tanahashi, Zack Sabre Jr., whoever wins that match, and then maybe Naito, if they want to do a direct rematch for that, I think that's probably the three that immediately stand out to me as like, okay, one of those three will come out and challenge Moxley once he retains.
And of course, when that comes back around, we'll be talking about any of those things too. And in the meantime, let's talk about some other outside of WWE, and we'll get back around to like the TV talk and stuff, but some other topic here that we never really talk about, WoW, for pretty obvious reasons, but the Tonga Twins, who I'm not that familiar with. I've heard the name before. I've never seen any of their work, but this was like an old short story that popped up in the news yesterday, I think it was, that they had put out a statement on Twitter that they are leaving WoW. And that they're now free agents, which that's already interesting enough because it's like, all right, well, then where are they going to go? Are they going to end up popping up in one of the companies that we do pay more attention to? But their statement was ended in a way that was even more interesting. So their full statement here, if you go to MKTwins_Steph on Twitter, we will be speaking out soon. But for now, we will leave it here. To all the women who are scared to speak up, we stand for you. You will no longer see us on WoW because we spoke up. You can't do this to good people who sacrifice their family. So evil. Mess with us, you mess with our kids and family, and that's personal. Wait on it. Tonga Twins are now free agents. The marathon continues. Tonga Twins is us. Hashtag fuck WoW. Which is like, all right, well, it's one thing to be like, okay, there's, you know, new wrestlers that are free agents on the market. Where do they go? Another thing to be like, fuck this company. We're speaking out and there's issues. And I'm curious. I have not actually watched any WoW. So I don't know like the pros and cons of it and stuff, but I'm curious what the hell is going on here. And I'm, you know, curious, where they end up going and how this ends up playing out. Have you seen anything from WoW?
No, I don't have any insights into it. I watch enough wrestling content to not fill it with, like, you know, the successor to GLOW and all of that stuff. I think it's... I know, you hear there's... when this new iteration of WoW was formed a couple of years back, that you heard a lot of rumbles surrounding that as well because of the whole Tess Blanchard involvement. And so I imagine it's probably pretty poorly run.
It kind of gives off that vibe, yeah.
And yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all. It doesn't strike me as like super prominent. And yeah, that's, as I say, I could totally understand certain people getting a bad experience there. But yeah, as I don't know enough to really categorize it one way or the other, but clearly, is it Tonga Twins?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's apparently they didn't seem to enjoy the time there, so hopefully they find somewhere else to ply their trade that will be a better experience for them.
I'm checking the roster page right now just to see if there's anybody that's like interesting that I actually even know any of the names for. None of them are standing out to me. Like, I don't recognize any of these names. Except for Santana Garrett, which, we saw a little bit of her here and there. I really think it's stupid that they called their roster members superheroes. That's really stupid. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it looks like the type of thing that, Holodead's on this roster too. It looks to me like the type of thing that if you only had WWE and there is no AEW, there is no TNA, there is no even NWA, and then somebody came around with this promotion as like the cutesy gimmicky, you know, it's self-referential almost in how like stupid it is in some ways, kind of gives off that vibe, at least for me, that they're could be like some value to that, but the fact that like these people do not seem to go anywhere and there's no buzz over this promotion other than when there's bad things that happen is not a good sign. And without knowing what they're going to speak out about and what their issues were or any of the other things that have been like an issue that they wanted to say fuck WoW for. I can kind of already just buy that, like, yeah, there's probably issues. And yeah, we're going to see if that, like, more of that comes out or something. But if there is anybody talented on the WoW roster that we should be paying attention to, and anybody's out there checking out, you know, the mother truckers, or who are some other people on this, like Exodus and Coach Campanelli, like, maybe these people have like some fun characters. Maybe they are people that they just need to get on a bigger show, and then it would be like, wow, man, you know, what a great talent that Ariel Sky is, or Angelica Dante, whatever. If anybody does check them out and you think we should be checking out something or whatever, let us know. And like where you would like to see the Tonga Twins pop up. I would assume, based off of not knowing virtually anything about them, that more than likely they probably are not going to be the next signings for, you know, WWE. If they were on their radar, they probably would have joined already. We might see them pop up in WWE. I would assume in NXT more so than anything else. Maybe more so TNA. They're going to be looking to fill in some voids. So that's another little, like, just total outsider type of thing happening at the moment. We do have some TV talk to run down and stuff. This week we had, you know, some interesting enough things and some things that, to be perfectly honest, I feel are kind of just on the blah side. On Monday Night Raw, mostly it was King of the Ring and Queen of the Ring stuff. And that's perfectly fine. Like, you know, I mean, that's kind of what you would want, like, to have these series of matches and stuff. I liked the CM Punk and Drew McIntyre stuff. For the most part, I liked the King and Queen of the Ring matches. They were, like, some of them, I don't really remember too much about, like, Jey Uso against Finn Balor. I don't remember really anything about Zoe Stark and Ivy Nile, but they had a good main event with Gunther and Sheamus. They had to replace some people with Dakota Kai replacing Asuka and Drew McIntyre getting replaced by Jey Uso at the beginning of it. We now know the rest of the bracket for the King and Queen of the Ring. And as far as Monday Night Raw is concerned, I don't have anything else to point out, but we're going to come back around to SmackDown in a little bit. Anything on Raw you want to talk about? You think is worthy to run down?
Well, so I didn't watch any of it because I don't, but I heard that the Ricochet and Ilya Dragunov match was really good.
Yeah, that was probably the best match, if not Gunther and Sheamus.
Yeah, so, I can't complain if they're going to put more wrestling on their actual wrestling show than they typically do. So it probably would have been a show that I probably would have enjoyed just based on the wrestling side of things. But yeah, not much more to add because, as I said, I didn't watch it.
And they didn't end up having Kofi Kingston versus Rey Mysterio or Shayna Baszler versus Zelina Vega. They're doing that on a house show today, I believe. So
across the 11th and 12th, so tomorrow and Sunday. The 11th and 12th.
So that's an interesting strategy for them to do that, to just, you know, decide to boost up the house show a little bit. I'm not entirely opposed to it, but at the same time, there is a part of me that's like, oh, just do it on TV. On the NXT side of things, that had a few noteworthy kind of things. We had Wesley and Josh Briggs have their match. They fought with Ivar afterwards, so it's kind of indicating that there's probably going to be a Fatal 4-Way at NXT Battleground. No confirmation on that yet, though. We're going to have to see about that. No Quarter Catch Crew had a whole thing that they're continuing on their story with the D'Angelo family, where at least Damon Kemp, it might have also been Miles Bourne, got abducted. So this is now the fifth and sixth person, I think, that the Angel family have thrown into a car, and we don't know what they're going to do with him.
Still baby faces, right?
Yeah, they're totally baby faces. Yeah. They had some people popping up here for main roster talent, like Meechan going up against Aaron Grace. They did the whole combine thing where they showed footage of like the women's division competing into like different categories for the athleticism, and you know, they're doing like the long jump and they're doing weightlifting things and all. They did a couple segments of that, and even though that's not something that I'm super duper into, I still think it's pretty interesting. Like, I've never been into watching, like, I don't care about the Olympics, for instance. And every so often I might turn something into the Olympics and just see, like, oh, I'll watch, like, you know, 5 minutes worth of this or something. But I've never cared that much about any kind of sports and stuff. But they used to do the combine for NXT, and they did it, like, as, like, a YouTube thing or something, like, 1 or 2 years. And I remember finding that pretty interesting. And I wish that we could actually see, like, the footage of how the hell does Ivar have, like, the biggest vertical leap out of everybody. Like, I want to see that. So it was kind of interesting to show that. They settled on the 12 women that are going to be in the running for the NXT Women's North American Championship. And they're, you know, pretty self-explanatory, the women that are involved in that. No real shockers there. You know, of course, you're going to have Fallon Henley in there. Of course, you're going to have Kalani Jordan. And, you know, they're not going to be giving spots to brand new people like Layla Diggs or anything. But that was a portion of the show. Fallon Henley continuing her heel turn. And a lot of, like, just, like, things that were, you know, just there for the sake of it. Like, Ridge Holland is hanging around Thea Hale a lot now. I don't know what's going on there. I'm not the biggest fan of it. But they did want to harp on one thing this week, which was pushing the Trick Williams and Lash Legend romance angle. And I've seen a lot of backlash to this. Not for that element, but for the fact that Noam Dar is being positioned as the first challenger for Trick Williams. And I like Noam Dar, but I have to admit, he is in a weak spot. Noam Dar doesn't come across to me as like a real credible threat to Trick Williams.
Well, this is the everlasting problem with not just WWE, but also like AEW and lots of other wrestling promotions. As soon as you have a top babyface win the title, their next challenger is almost always quite disappointing. After a long chase, you had Trick Williams after finally overcoming Dragunov, now has to face Noam Dar, who's, you know, totally entertaining and good wrestler, but doesn't feel like a top-level main event guy to carry on Trick's momentum. In the same way, AJ Styles at this current time is not the right person to be carrying on the momentum of Cody Rhodes, or arguably Christian Cage isn't the right person to be going against Swerve Strickland.
Yeah.
Like, they're all just, you know, they're steps below, and it's obvious that, okay, well, this person's just retaining, this is before we get to who his real, like, first feud is going to be against. And you know, at least it's interlinked. I think they're just using Noam Dar as a vehicle to push the Trick Williams and Lash Legend relationship. So Noam Dar's will challenge Trick Williams, but fundamentally he's just a pawn in the bigger story between those two, rather than, you know, being a legitimate threat to the title.
It doesn't seem
to be a TV match.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like, it doesn't seem like it's good enough to me to be NXT Battleground, that they should do this just on television beforehand. And they're probably going to drag it out. It's probably going to happen at Battleground. And, you know, they're not really setting up anybody else to be another challenger to sort of like do the Noam Dar thing and then just move on and have, you know, Guy X is going up against Trick Williams for the pay-per-view. But the, I could see why people are annoyed, being like, how is Noam Dar supposed to be going up against this guy? Because Noam Dar just held the Heritage Cup, and that's not an equivalent to that. And he is smaller, and he is a goofy character. And yeah, it's not necessarily the match that I think is going to be drawing the most attention for this pay-per-view. So that's kind of how NXT shaped up to be. AEW Dynamite, of course, happened this week, and you know, some interesting things happening all in there. We got Orange Cassidy against Trent Beretta to continue that feud going on, which that could have just been something to build to Double or Nothing. And I'm kind of surprised that we just did it already a little bit. So what do you think they're going to end up doing with this? You think that that's just not on the table for Double or Nothing? Or
oh, it's definitely going to be a Double or Nothing match as well. I mean, this wasn't conclusive. I mean, you had Orange Cassidy beat Trent Barreto using the turnbuckle pad in order to counteract the fact that Trent Barreto was trying to use his own turnbuckle pad to get Orange. But then you had Trent Barreto attack Orange after the bell. He did a pole driver onto the steel steps. And then you had Don Callis get involved as well. And that's the most interesting component of this, is as well as the disintegration of the best friends, it's Don Callis seemingly is trying to align himself to Orange Cassidy. Which I think is an interesting direction. I think eventually, you know, he will go with Trent Barreto instead, and he's just using that to try, and it'll just be a big swerve to say, like, okay, I'm gonna seem like I'm gonna be joining Orange Cassidy, but instead I'm gonna join up with Trent. And I think that Chris Statlander will follow as well, because she's getting heavily involved in this feud as well. But I imagine they'll have some kind of more no DQ or violent stipulation for the match at Double or Nothing instead.
Any kind of particular gimmick, you think?
It's weird because obviously we'll talk about there's going to be an Anarchy in the Arena match at the show, so you can't really do some sort of just general hardcore match. But, you know, maybe a steel cage or some kind of last man standing or something of that ilk that can be separate enough or have its own like separation from what happens there. But I think that something will happen where a member of the Don Callis family or Don Callis himself gets involved to help Trent beat Orange Cassidy.
Yeah, I mean, Callis is definitely something that I didn't anticipate being involved in this. So something's up there. Anything with the Callis stuff that's been happening lately, I don't know, it seems like they're sort of just like trying to figure out a new direction to me. So maybe this is going to lead to something else. Maybe Trent's going to replace Will Ospreay in that group, and we're going to get like the full-on Ospreay leaving in some way. But you mentioned the Anarchy in the Arena match. That is something that we are going to get coming back here. It's going to be the Elite, the four members being the Young Bucks, Jack Perry, and Kazuchika Okada. Which I don't know if you noticed this, but I've been paying attention a lot. So many people in AEW love saying Kazuchika Okada. It drives me nuts. Absolutely nuts. I keep hearing Kazuchika Okada, and I'm like, oh my god, it's an A at the end. I fucking hate that. But those four are going to be going up against this pretty, like, you know, you would expect FDR to be involved. Okay. And then two mystery partners that end up being revealed to be Eddie Kingston and Bryan Danielson. Not what I would have anticipated.
I mean, I think that makes sense. He had,
I'm all for it.
Eddie Kingston's had his run-ins with both the Bucks, and obviously lost his Continental Championship to Okada. So he's coming back into that scene to take them on. And Danielson... I see Danielson as like the representative of, like, you almost push that message about how Tony Khan said that if he was to ever like be like things, the person he'd want running the company is Bryan Danielson. So you could kind of run that thing as like him being like almost like someone chosen by Tony Khan to definitely be on this team to take on the Elite.
I mean, we didn't really do it as like a you know, like a true discussion. We might do it in the future, but the idea of like splitting the roster in the Elite versus Team AEW beyond this, like if we were to just take the entire roster or whatever, it might be a dark cast in the future. It might be something that we do around like Forbidden Door or something. I don't know. But Danielson, of course, would definitely be one of the leaders, if not the leader of Team AEW. So that... in that regard does make sense. But when they announced that it was like two mystery partners, I was just like, all right, well, you know, maybe there's some kind of other thing. And then I wasn't necessarily expecting Eddie Kingston, Bryan Danielson. So that's going to be a hell of a match. Of course, we're going to talk about that when we get into our predictions and stuff. Rocky Romero had a whole thing with Orange Cassidy about trying to go for the six-man tag titles. you know, whatever.
Got 9 belts, by the way.
What's that?
They got 9 belts.
Yeah.
The Dang Dang Gang.
With the Jay White carrying around with the bat and having his 3 championships.
They got the scissor version of the Trios Championships, AEW Trios Championships, the real AEW Trios Championships, and also the Ring of Honor Trios Championships, all carrying them around at the same time. Like, no, maybe there are too many belts in AEW.
Do you think we're going to end up getting that necessarily for the pay-per-view going forward?
No, I think that Rocky Romero is also going to turn heel on Orange Cassidy soon.
Poor Orange, man.
Well, that's the story. It's going to be Orange on his own. Like, taking on all the best friends that shunned him. Because I think he's going to lose Stalander, he's going to lose Trent. Chuck's already might never wrestle again, as far as we know. And I think he'll lose Rocky as well, because Rocky's really actually really, really good as a heel. Like, he's been one of the top heels in CMLL for the last, like, 2 years or so. So I think that he should carry that over into AEW, considering the fact that he's certainly not super over as a babyface in AEW.
And, I mean, he did lose that match. So it wasn't like, you know, hey, if I win that match, we can get a 6-man tag title shot, and then he loses. So, you know, but they're doing something with Pac and Jay White now. So
I'm just, Death Triangle. Yeah.
Kind of seems like Death Triangle is in the mix there. Cause he, Jay White had said like, well, yeah. Death Triangle is dead or whatever, but I don't know if Phoenix is cleared. Is he, you know,
he wrestled in Collision a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, okay. So then that should be a good sign then. A lot of other stuff. I mean, the learning tree thing. I don't think there's really too much to talk about there.
They talk about the fact that Jericho's like turned it around as he typically does. I think that gimmick's like great, and that's the thing. As soon as he like makes me doubt how like he needs to go away for a while and stuff like that, he then comes up with a new gimmick that's like, oh yeah, this is actually quite funny. Like his promo that he cut where he's just saying like, how are you doing, Calgary? And then just immediately goes, Edmonton. And it's like the crowd just booing him because like he says the wrong name. And then he just says, well, we're all here to learn. I make mistakes, but I learn from them. And that's why I'm the learning tree, Chris Jericho. And it's just like, he's doing fun stuff now, finally.
How do you feel about the Mogul Embassy splitting up?
Well, I think they're doing the same thing with the Orange Cassidy thing they're doing with Swerve as well. So I think it makes sense because I don't think Cage and the Gates of Agony work as a babyface unit. So I think they would have eventually had to turn on Swerve. I like the fact that Prince Nana wasn't involved in it, or at least not directly, because I think that he needs to stay babyface with Swerve.
Yeah, I hope so.
But, you know, I think that they're basically just doing an all against Swerve mentality as well. So Swerve is pretty much at the moment he's feuding with the rest of the Mogul Embassy, or the remnants of the Mogul Embassy. He's feuding with Christian Cage and the Patriarchy. He's feuding with the Young Bucks, by extension, feuding with the rest of the Elite and Jack Perry and Okada. And then when Adam Page comes back, he'll be feuding with him as well. So I think that's basically setting him up for like 3 to 4 months of like just pure television. I think leading into even All In, I think that there's a very real possibility that the main event of All In now, or at least one of the big matches at All In, is going to be Swerve versus Hangman Page for the title.
Yeah, that can make it. If they don't pull the trigger on that earlier than that, then yeah that seems like that's a really good option.
Because I've got the mindset now that because Ospreay is almost certainly going to win the international championship instead, I think they'll just go with him and use him to make the international championship like super big. In my mind, I'm doing like long-term fantasy booking stuff, but if it was up to me, what I would do with that is, with the Continental Classic that'll come up at the end of the year, I would do Ospreay wins the International Championship and holds it up until the Continental Classic, and then Okada is also in the Continental Classic, and then the final of the Continental Classic would be Okada versus Ospreay to unify both the Continental and International Championships.
The Intercontinental.
There you exactly. Go. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that could be their plan. I like the idea that the Mogul Embassy is splitting up, because I never really liked the Mogul Embassy to begin with. And Prince Nana with Swerve works. Swerve with the Gates of Agony and with Brian Cage, it just seemed like, to me at the very least, 4 people thrown together. like Khan and Leona, they work as a team. I don't even think that they work with Brian Cage. And then when you throw Swerve in there, it's just, you got to get those two other elements out there. So I am totally down for him not being a part of this group anymore. And then for that matter, I don't know if they really necessarily need to have Prince Nana in there, because they don't have gimmicks that, to me at least, register as, let's have a mouthpiece that's more like, you got some swag to him, a little bit of, you know, charisma and all. Like, if you want to keep the three together instead of just have Bishop Khan and Toa Leona separate from Brian Cage, they could just be a couple badass guys. That's it. And when Swerve turns babyface to do all this, like you said, they don't work as a babyface act. And on top of that, you want the babyface champion to not have a group of giant guys that can always come to his aid as well. You want him to be more vulnerable. So I like it for a lot of different reasons. I also like it for the sense that if they want to kill some time over the course of the next few weeks, they want to do some kind of, you know, special episode of Dynamite or whatever, you could easily just have Swerve Strickland defend the title against Brian Cage or something. And yeah, it's just, he, you know, he beats him and it's a title match on a non-pay-per-view leading up to the other things. And you don't have to just make it entirely Swerve against Nick Wayne, Swerve against Killswitch, and Swerve against Christian at the pay-per-view.
I think they're just building up a lot of stuff for Swerve to do over the next few months, which is good for your world champion.
How do you feel about this whole movement that people are trying to do of Mercedes Moné versus Willow Nightingale should be the main event?
Oh, well, it absolutely shouldn't, because they haven't done a good enough job building up to that being the main event.
I'm glad that you are on the same page that I am on that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it will be a prominent match on the show. It will be featured, but it shouldn't be the main event. The main event's going to be Anarchy in the Arena now. But yeah, it'll have at least a featured position on it. I feel they did, you know, a couple of good promos for this one, but they need to get Mercedes in the ring like ASAP, because this stalling has definitely hindered her star power, I think, at least just from a baseline perspective. I don't know if it's like affecting like her numbers and everything surrounding that, but she doesn't feel as big a deal as when she arrived in AEW, which is the opposite of what you should be doing.
Yeah, I'm not feeling it, and definitely not feeling it enough for it to be the main event. I think that's the stan culture coming out, where everybody's just like, we want what's on paper to be a big rah-rah thing, as opposed to, do you really think that that's worth overtaking Anarchy in the Arena or the AEW World Championship or even the Women's World Championship, like, in certain regards? Like, it is a bigger deal, I think, Mercedes Moné wrestling than Toni Storm against Serena Deeb. I'll give you that. But I just can't take that and go, well, Mercedes wrestling equals better than everything else going on, and, you know, jump straight to the main event for that.
Speaking of the Women's World Championship, I was not a big fan of the Toni Storm stuff on this show. I've been more aligned with the Toni Storm a lot more the last couple of months, especially because she's been wrestling better and not been so dependent on the gimmick. But I don't like the fact that she's still being presented as the heel. It's not working. The crowd really want to cheer her. She should be a babyface. Because they seem to be going through a direction of making this feud, which doesn't work, because in the same way Deonna Purrazzo didn't work, because they're not dynamic enough as babyfaces to counteract the over-the-top personality of Toni Storm. And then it also has the fact, because they've seemingly decided to go in the direction like, okay, when Toni Storm will turn on Mariah May, and so Mariah May will be the babyface going into their inevitable match and win the title as babyface, probably at All In, because it's in the UK, and so Mariah May will be adored in that regard. But they really think that the best course of action should be have Toni Storm as a babyface that shows genuine affection and care towards Mariah May, and then Mariah May turns on her. Mariah May's the heel, when they go into the match, even though All In should be treated as a babyface. But Toni Storm would be treated probably very well as well, just because people love her gimmick, and also she did a lot of stuff in the UK as well. So I don't think she'd get a negative reaction at All In. But you just have, like, both the crowd be into both of them. Like, imagine that, the crowd being super excited for a women's match with two both participants. But, yeah, I just think they're going really backwards with insisting on Toni Storm being the heel in this feud, and also seemingly being the heel in the whole Mariah May situation as well. I mean, we know how it's going to go in terms of she's obviously going to retain the title against Serena Deeb at Double or Nothing, mm-hmm. and then she's going to fight Mina Shirakawa at Forbidden Door.
Yeah, that's most likely the logical conclusion, yeah.
Yeah, and then off the back of that, then it'll be the build towards Mariah May at the All In, because that would only be like a couple of months away from that, and they don't have a pay-per-view in July, so you have the long build period up until the match that will happen at All In. But yeah, I just think that they should now be going full steam ahead with, like, yeah, Toni Storm's a babyface, her and Mariah is a babyface act, especially because they had Mariah May face Harley Cameron on Dynamite as well. So clearly they're making Mariah May a babyface, so why not make Toni Storm a babyface as well?
Yeah, so, I mean, that was not everything from the Dynamite episode. We still had the Adam Copeland and Brody King.
Yeah, that was a fun match,
yeah,
and they're gonna do a good hardcore match to get involved in it, and they're gonna do a Copeland versus Kyle O'Reilly on Collision as well.
Yeah.
So, and then inevitably do Copeland versus Malakai Black at Double or Nothing for the title. So, you know, they're putting things together. Like, Double or Nothing is shaping up, so that's good to see.
Yeah. So, but in the meantime, of course, you know, we'll talk more about that kind of stuff. But there is one other AEW story to talk about outside of that, which is Sky Blue and everything that's happening with her you know, quote unquote backlash, which is like really stupid to even say, but there I don't know the person online, it doesn't really matter who it was, but there was somebody who had been shouting a bunch of things that was like, you know, very lewd comments about like her ass and stuff. And that led to, I wish I could say a discussion, but more so people bickering and stuff about, yeah, one person had said like, and it's the same story we've heard on so many different things, which is like, well, don't show your ass and you won't get, you know, people jeering at you and whatever. And then of course, you know, to their right, people like Chelsea Green being like, yeah, that's not the problem. People like you are the problem. And it's been a story that's been happening over the past few days. You know, there's been support for Sky Blue and all. And I don't know. To me, it's just like, I get it. You're fucking attracted to somebody, but don't be a jackass. Like, we all just grow the fuck up, you know?
Yeah, I mean, these sort of instances bring out the worst in not just the whole incident itself, which is already disgusting and horrible, and glad that person was dealt with. The fact that he was there with his child at the show,
mm-hmm.
just making openly aggressive comments, sexually aggressive comments towards Sky Blue during the match, and then when the crowd around him tried to say "shut the fuck up," like show some respect, he just got louder and louder and louder, and then was very like deservedly kicked out by like Aubrey Edwards. Racial lettering was out there and other people, security getting him out of the building as he deserves. But then it just brings out the worst of like people coming back, like you say, the people say, oh, she shows her ass all the time, so like that you invite those sort of comments when you dress like that. Or other people saying like, well, she's a heel, he has a right to heckle her because that's just part of the show. It's like, no, just like be intelligent or empathetic human beings for once in your life. Don't just like live in front of the keyboard, like jacking off to whatever like photos you can find online about all this stuff. It's like, yeah, essentially you can find a lot of the women's wrestlers attractive in the same way that a lot of female fans or male fans even can find a lot of the male wrestlers attractive. And guess what? They wear a lot less than the women wear on these shows. So like, so you have to consider that as well. But there's more about the fact of Yeah, but most people are just like, you know, they're silent and respectful about it. And if you want to heckle them as a heel, then that's totally fine. You boo them, say, oh, we hate you, Sky, or anything along those lines. Not obviously not in like, you hate the character, not the person. But yeah. You know what I mean when
you know,
I'm saying
somebody
that.
Starts like beating down a baby face and it's like, boo, you suck. Yeah. We don't like you. Like that's the heel response, not
exactly
to get like, you know, predatory.
Yeah, exactly. Like, because what's that? Yeah, it's just really creepy behavior. It makes people feel unsafe in the place that they're working. It's, yeah, and Sky Blue legitimately was obviously very upset about that. She came on Twitter later and said that she was happy for the outpouring of support she received, and that's good for her. I'm very happy that people like Chelsea Green have said things they have to do, because it's also one of those things where it can easily, just for some reason, the way that the wrestling Twitterverse and everything is now, you could get into some sort of WWE versus AEW war type thing, just like, oh, this would never happen on a WWE show, or like, oh, this is AEW fans being the way they are. It's just like, no, this is just, there are loads of fans, I say loads of fans, but there's a vocal minority of fans from any wrestling promotion that do this sort of thing at shows on a weekly basis, and they should all be treated like the scum that they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing about like which promotion has the best fans or the most well-behaved fans or anything like that. No, it's just trying to get rid of these people from attending these shows in any formal fashion moving forward, because they don't belong there. That's not being a fan, that's being a creep.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's one of those stories that it's self-explanatory, but at the same time, you got to mention it because as self-explanatory as it is, it still doesn't resonate for people, which is like, you know, that's not good. And I hope that, you know, the negatives that came out of this breed way more positives in the long run. And it's a shame to be having that discussion in general, just because the way that people are. Let's round things out here with, if we're talking TV talk and stuff, the SmackDown side of things. And yeah, I mean, when it comes to looking at last week's SmackDown, it's not like, there's so much that we need to get into that like changes the game for that and all, but, they did their episode, whatever, you know, they tamped down under retain their tag titles over the Street Profits. We had Carlito explaining why he attacked the Dragon Lee, which was like the most self-explanatory explanation possible and all. When it comes to this episode of SmackDown that we're going to get tonight, we have an update for the King and Queen of the Ring tournament. And Bobby Lashley has been pulled. He is one of many different people who is injured in WWE right now. I don't know exactly what the injury is. I don't even know if it's 100% legit, to be perfectly honest. It kind of feels to me like maybe it isn't. And the replacement's going to be Angelo Dawkins. So it'll be Dawkins against Tama Tonga, which then switches it up entirely to, I had thought Bobby Lashley had a good chance of beating Tama Tonga by like count out or disqualification or something. Now I'm just like, all right, I guess Tama Tonga beats Angelo Dawkins. And, LA Knight goes up against Santos Escobar. Whoever wins that goes up against Tama Tonga most likely. So I'm assuming LA Knight against Tama Tonga. We got Randy Orton and AJ Styles, Baron Corbin and Carmelo Hayes. And those strike me more as Randy Orton against Carmelo Hayes in the next round. And that kind of pins, okay, well, who's going to go up against Gunther? We could be looking at Gunther versus Randy Orton for the finals of this.
I mean, that's what I had posited earlier. I thought that would be the right choice. I think that's the most interesting. I mean, I of like having a super established name, Randy Orton, likely be defeated by Gunther, and then, you know, having Gunther as King of the Ring and having defeated like a 14-time world champion on the way of getting there, that would be a pretty good way of doing it.
I'm totally down for that. I think that'd be great. Now, the Queen of the Ring tournament was even more of a, you know, kind of up in the air. And they still actually do not have everybody listed on there. It's like, man, you're waiting on something. I don't know what's up, but there's going to be Bianca Belair against Candice LeRae. I wonder who's going to win that one. And then there's TBA against TBA. Naomi and Nia Jax are on the other side, and Jade Cargill and Piper Niven. So, more realistically, we're looking at Jade against Nia, and then Bianca against Blank. Who do you think the Blanks could end up being?
I don't know. I don't know why they would be so unaware of who would be competing in this by this late in the game. Because you'd presume it would be like Tiffany Stratton or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or like a...
I mean, on the roster right
Blair now... Blair Davenport, maybe?
Like, it's not going to be Bayley. We know that.
Yeah.
B-Fab doesn't really wrestle, so it's not going to be her. There's Blair Davenport, Chelsea Green, Electra Lopez, Indy Hartwell, Meechan, Tegan Nox, and Tiffany Stratton. It's all you really have to work with. So
I presume whoever it is going to lose Bianca in the next round anyway. If, unless it's Tiffany, everyone else would lose to Bianca in the next round. So, and I don't know if I'd have Tiffany be in it. I'm surprised that Nia Jax is in it. I assumed that she was going to be fighting Bayley at the pay-per-view. But now it just makes me immediately think that Bayley's not going to have a match at the pay-per-view.
And I'm starting to think that the reason why they have TBA versus TBA, or at least as far, I mean, let me double check to see if WWE.com's switched anything up since then. But last time I had checked, it was not announced yet. It looks like it's still just those three matches. So I would assume that's because they don't necessarily know if they want Blair or Tiffany Stratton in there. And depending on who they go with, it would be like, who do we feed them to? And yeah, I mean, if they don't have, you know, everybody in the roster available and stuff, but they could very, very easily have like Blair against Meechan and then just move on after that. Or they could do Tiffany Stratton against Tegan Nox or something. The fact that they don't know that yet, or that they just haven't bothered to announce it yet, is very interesting to me, because it kind of already seems like it's, you know, Bianca and Jade on that side, and then are we going to get Bianca versus Jade? That seems a little, you know, jumping straight to that.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like now that Jade's in it, you almost feel like, well, she'll probably win the Queen of the Ring, because otherwise they'd have to have her lose at some point. I mean, I think they could do a thing of having Nia beat Jade by like a count out or something, or like DQ.
They could do that.
Just to protect Jade, I think, so she doesn't lose officially, but like she loses by DQ means that you hold off on the match between Jade and Bianca until later on, and you do Bianca versus Nia as the SmackDown final before one of them goes forward into fighting whoever in the Raw one. I'm presuming the Raw side's going to be won by Io Sky, so I think Io Sky versus Bianca would probably make sense.
Yeah, at this point, with like, it's Lyra Valkyrie against Zoe Stark in the next round, and it's Io Sky against whoever beats the other between Zelina Vega and Shayna Baszler, so it's probably Shayna Baszler. Io and Shayna, I would assume, would go down to Io, and then Lyra and Zoe, more than likely, it's probably Lyra, and then Io beats Lyra. So Io in the finals up against whoever's on the SmackDown side, unless they plan on doing some kind of a real, like, surprise, surprise, it's this person or something. Kind of seems to me like it's Io Sky against Jade, and Jade more than likely wins. But that's not how I had thought that this was going to play out. So it's pretty interesting how they're doing this. And by the end of the night, we're going to know a little bit more information about that. We'll see who moves on. We'll see maybe if they announce those to other people and get some other information about how that tournament's going to play out and all. But I think that that's pretty much all that they have set up for this episode, other than Cody will be there, which is like, all right, well, you know, he's a champion. He should be there. So there's the hot tags that I got written down. And of course, as always, if you have any other ideas of what you want us to break down, or, you know, some topics that we didn't get into or whatever like that, leave a comment below. We can leave a comment in response, or we can talk about it next week or something. In the meantime, click on all those things that are really helpful. The like button, the subscribe button, the notification bell, the join button, the thanks button. Show your support in any kind of way that you can like that. Join the Discord. Check out fanboysanonymous.com for all the Blue Brand stuff and the geek culture spectrum. Go to the link tree at amangotree.com and anthonymango.com, same thing. Like and follow and favorite and share and subscribe and whatever to all those different accounts you can see there, like the Letterboxd. And if you want to join me on LinkedIn, whatever, you know, it's not really all that impressive when it comes to an entertainment kind of thing. But hey, if you are, you want to. But I'm on Facebook and Twitter and all that at Tony Mango. Make sure you're also following Callum.
Yep, you can find me on Twitter at Wickmeister14. You can check out the power rankings every single Saturday over on smartgamemoment.com, where I do my rankings of the WWE superstars based on their previous week's performances. And you also there, you can check out the Fantasy League, also at WWEFantasyLeague.com, to see how our teams are doing at the very, very early stages. Only 1 week in now, but points are being tallied up, and yeah, see who's gone off to the best start as we build towards next year's WrestleMania to crown our winner. But yeah, see how it's going.
It was not a very good option for me to pick Javon Evans. They just pretty much did nothing with him other than him popping up this week for like 2 seconds in a parking lot thing.
Hey, like, it's still points.
Yeah, still technically it's an appearance point, but
yeah, but you know, it's early days. We'll see what they end up doing with him. Or he might be the first person you eliminate from your team after King of the Queen of the Ring. Who knows?
Very, very likely. We'll see about how this all plays out. But yep, that's going to do us in, of course. Thank you for listening to this episode. Thank you for checking us out. And thank you for all your support, whatever means that it is. And we will be seeing you next time. But for now, this has been another Smart Out Moment. And we're being counted out.